Thank God. Could you imagine a world without Twilight?
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymee Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, Hungarian vampires? Question mark?
Yes.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Happy Spooktober, Ben.
Happy Halloween. Yay for our third. Can you believe it? Our third Halloween spooktacular episode.
I cannot.
I know. Three
Well,
down.
Last year we did two parts, right? Mm-hmm. On the Halloween episode.
Yeah, we had like a whole Spooktober month because we did necrophilia and then the two-parter.
And stay tuned because we're going to re-release those episodes this month because obviously, as we learned from our friends and colleagues in a text message today, that they do not go into our back catalog because they don't know that we've already covered some stuff.
Obviously not.
Yeah. So Spooktober is our favorite month and we love to do Halloween episodes.
Yes.
This episode, however, is a thank you to our Hungarian listeners because Hungary is number two after the U.S. in our Spotify audience.
Wow.
We're streaming in 23 countries.
Nice.
But the most listens are from first the U.S., obviously, and then Hungary, and then the Philippines.
Yeah. I mean, I've made this joke before, but B, we're worldwide.
Yes. Yes, don't say it. Clean podcast.
Clean podcast only.
So I have visited Budapest, but it's actually Budapest is how you say that. And it's a lovely city. We're going to apologize in advance to our Hungarian listeners for all of the Hungarian words that we're going to butcher in this episode.
Yeah, luckily you get to butcher most of them. So I'll let you apologize for that. But I've never been to Budapest.
Yes.
But one of my favorite TV characters of all time, as well as the actress that plays her, is from Budapest. I don't think we've talked about Green Acres on the podcast before.
No,
maybe
never.
We have.
Maybe.
But Lisa Douglas, the wife in the show, she's from Hungary in the show and obviously in real life too. Ava Gabor. She was a Hungarian immigrant and actress, and on the show, she was like this New York socialite who had to move to the country with her husband because he wanted to start a farm. They moved to Hooterville. That was the name of the town, by the way.
What state was it supposed to be in?
It was like in Indiana, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. She was like a New York socialite, so she wasn't a housewife. And I remember, after every meal, she would just like brush the plates off of the before paper plates into the garbage because she didn't want to do the dishes. Yeah. And she'd always make hot cakes. But in thinking about like Hungary in this episode, I remember one episode, she told her husband, when you married me, you knew I couldn't cook or sew or anything. All I could do was talk Hungarian and do impressions of Zsa Zsa Gabor, which is her sister in real life.
Oh.
So it was really funny because the show actually broke the fourth wall a lot too.
Really?
So this was kind of like a fourth wall breaking joke.
I'm sure I saw episodes of Green Acres as a kid or something, but that's an old reference.
And it is so, you all heard me. Like you and Rita both came, I was watching clips the other day in my office, came to see what I was laughing about because I was laughing so much.
So maybe we should check that out.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So back to Spooktober.
Yeah, let's
regular
get back to
podcast
it.
Listeners might wonder what this has to do with justice, but hey, sometimes we need a break.
Yeah, for sure. Breaks are nice, but also we can connect anything to justice.
Exactly.
I bet we'll do it, and I bet we'll do it good.
Yes, we'll do a good job. So the title of this episode has a question mark at the end because of the debates I read online about whether Dracula was Hungarian or Romanian.
Nice.
We're talking about Bram Stoker's Dracula here, where the novel begins with Jonathan Harker's journal as he travels out of Vienna, Austria, through Hungary. And before we get ahead of ourselves by diving into this debate...
Yeah, I can't wait to find out the answer.
Let's back it up a bit and talk about vampires. More generally. So, Ben, what do you know about vampires based on mostly film, but also books, pop culture, etc.?
Well, I'll say that vampires actually aren't my favorite of kind of like the monster genre.
Yes.
But Bela Lugosi's Dracula, we're talking like way back, not
1930s. He was Hungarian.
Was he?
Yes.
Wow. cool. I didn't realize that.
Yes.
But when I was little, I loved all of those old Universal monsters and the black and white monster movies, and AMC, yeah. you know, would play those on Halloween. And I remember one year, my mom, like, just, you know, put in a VHS tape and just hit record and let the whole thing like record until the tape ended.
That's so nice of her.
And I don't remember the exact details, but I can remember being in the back seat of the car coming home. I think we went to like Mr. Gaddy's for a birthday party or something, and just being like, oh, I can't wait to check out this tape and see what's on this tape and see all of these movies. I also really love the vampire on Sesame Street, but he probably doesn't count, does he? Yes, of course he counts.
Yes.
Van Koren the vampire joke.
Oh, God. This episode is going to be ridiculous already. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. Off the top of my head, I would say...
What do you know about vampires?
Vampires, they're undead.
Right.
They have fangs.
Check.
Drink blood.
Yes.
They can't be out in sunlight.
Yeah.
They don't cast reflections, mm-hmm. or they can't see themselves in mirrors. Repelled by garlic.
Yes.
And you have to kill them by hammering a wooden stake in their hearts.
Right. What if you just decapitate them?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think I remember anything about that.
I mean, like, different vampire, like, you know, stories or you know, yes. mythologies have different rules about
exactly.
that.
Exactly. That's what we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to talk about different folklore, and they have mm-hmm. all added different elements. But vampires generally, of course, are undead, but human-looking.
Right.
Mythical creatures that feed on blood to survive. Yikes. Tales of supernatural beings consuming the blood or flesh of the living have been found in nearly every culture around the world for many centuries. Ancient civilizations like Babylonia believed that it was demons who did this because the word vampire did not yet exist. So for them, this mm-hmm. was just like a demon, right?
Yeah.
So I know you like to throw in etymology.
Oh, yeah.
So do you want to tell readers, listeners, why did I say readers? Because I was writing it probably, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
About the word vampire.
Yeah, so this is from a 1985 article on the history of the word by Katerina Wilson. Linguistic studies concerning the etymology of the term vampire in the first recorded occurrences of the word in major European languages indicate that the word is actually neither Hungarian nor Romanian. It seems to be a word that kind of is, you know, pretty much has its own meaning. A lot of times, you know, when we point to words and cool, kind of like other meanings and things, but no cool origin here. Just, you know, Eastern Europeans started using the word vampire. The OED says it could be related to a word, uber, meaning witch.
Yes.
But it's more generally accepted as a Slavic origin of the word empire from 1047.
Yes, nice roll there.
Thank you.
I asked Rita yesterday mm-hmm. how to say that word and what her understanding of it was, mm-hmm. and she said it was a scary creature or a demon.
Ah, gotcha.
And she did roll that R mm-hmm. at the end, so good job.
Thank you. So more history here. Do we need
yes.
to get in our time machine?
We do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk a bit about old Slavic folklore, but as it turns out, it has been English and American writers who popularized the word vampire by tying it to the Hungarian word vampire. Hmm. And vampire is also somewhat of a recent construction, if you think about the 19th century as recent. Of course, we got into our time machine, but mm-hmm. in the context of what we're going to be discussing, it's more recent, right? Mm-hmm. This Hungarian word postdates the first use of the term in most Western languages by more than a century. The word was in common usage in France by the 18th century, although cases of suspected vampirism were reported in Poland and Russia in the 17th century. Investigations into vampirism appeared in newspaper reports in countries such as Austria and France, with one of the earliest references the results of an official investigation into vampirism mm. in the Graditz district of in 1725. So Wilson noted that some of the pamphlets identified the Serbian district Gradec as a place in Hungary rather than a province of Hungary. Mm-hmm. And this might have influenced the popular belief that Hungary is the homeland of vampires.
Oh, cool.
A vampire outbreak was also reported 6 years after in Serbia, further linking the vampire to the Hungarian region. So this period of time, the vampire outbreak, is what Stanley Stepanek, an associate professor of Slavic languages and literature and an authority on vampires who's right down the road from us at UVA, refers to the Great Vampire Epidemic.
Okay, so many things there. A vampire authority academic. That might even be cooler than a vigilante authority.
I think so.
Yeah, I think he's got vampire, the best job. Yeah, vampire is cooler.
He also teaches a course on Dracula.
Oh,
so.
Man, I want to take that class.
Yeah.
But also a vampire epidemic. Yes. Is that like where a vampire goes to the doctor for coffin?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Thank you.
So we're talking a little bit more about the word, right? Mm-hmm. So the earliest recorded uses of the term vampire, and this is all according to Dr. Stepanek. So, you know, he's the expert here. So he says they appear in French, English, and Latin, and they refer to vampirism in Poland, Russia, and Macedonia, southern Yugoslavia. The second and more sweeping introduction of the word occurs in German, French, and English, and this corresponds with the Serbian vampire epidemic of 1725 to 1732.
Yeah, tell me more about this vampire epidemic. Yeah.
So the historical data appear to complement the linguistic studies. So for the first occurrences of the term vampire in European languages, all of them refer to Slavic superstitions. The wide dissemination of the term and its extensive use in the vernacular follows the outburst of vampirism in Serbia. So although the superstition of vampirism seems to have developed in Eastern Europe, the word vampire that is now universally used to describe the phenomenon seemed to have gained popularity in the West. The actual wide-scale popularity of the vampire theme was through translations and adaptations of Polidori's The Vampire in the 1820s.
Okay, I said it before, I'll say it again. Tell me more about this vampire epidemic. I am waiting with bated breath.
Yes, so again, this is all history. Evidence of vampires in Slavic belief dates back to the 9th century, but is likely much older than that. So evidence of official attempts to quell vampire belief. So people mm-hmm. were believing in vampires and the church is trying to stop that.
Yeah, for sure.
So church and rulers in Eastern Europe, like stories about them trying to quell this in official records. You can find this in Serbian legal codes in the 14th century. They were trying to also ban vampire burials or any methods used to hinder the vampire from coming back by desecrating its grave or mutilating its corpse.
Yeah.
By burning or beheading. So what this shows is that the belief of the vampire was not just old, but a problem significant enough that attempts were made to eradicate it.
Mm.
So the culminating point of all of these ancient beliefs is the Great Vampire Epidemic, according to Dr. Stepanek. So this was in the 18th century, as we mentioned. It is sometimes just referred to simply as the vampire epidemic.
Wasn't that great?
It's a great time. When people believed vampires were not only real, but suddenly appearing in large numbers for unknown reasons all throughout Eastern Europe. So after the case in Serbia in 1725 that kicked this off, the vampire epidemic, where people believed a vampire had appeared and caused an illness, another case arose in 1726, and then you get hysteria concerning vampires beginning to spread through Eastern Europe and then even making it to parts of Western Europe.
Nice.
So part of this was misinterpretations of the process of decomposition. While villagers in Eastern Europe were unearthing the dead, thinking that would stop the spread of disease. So still, the question that plagued people at the time was, what was the origin of the actual deaths that were occurring?
So people were dying and they were saying like, oh, it's vampires.
Right.
But really it was
not understanding.
Like, yeah, some other disease or virus or something.
Sure. Again, this is from our friend down the road, vampire expert.
Vampire expert.
He said that records do not provide an accurate consensus of how many bodies were being unearthed as vampires during the vampire epidemic, when bodies were being dug up to look for signs due to the fear. So we don't really have a sense of how many people died of disease at the time. So the links between, you know, the phenomenon vampire epidemic to disease, we can sort of use that to hypothesize about earlier periods in Slavic history. So, you know, what disease or diseases were responsible for the thing that we call the vampire?
Mm-hmm.
Or put differently, what diseases caused people to think vampires existed?
Yeah.
So, you know, what could be epidemic and causing all of these deaths, and would be in need of an explanation in a time when medical knowledge was primitive? And so this is key to the vampire's function as a symbol of disease in original folklore.
Mm-hmm.
It provided an answer when science was lacking.
Yeah, we don't know why people are dying. We don't understand this.
Right.
Like, maybe it's vampires.
Yes. So two diseases that were largely responsible for the deaths during the great vampire epidemic were pellagra. I'm assuming that's how you say that. Pellagra.
I have never heard of this before in my life. I do not know.
And rabies.
Have heard of that.
Yes. So pellagra is a disease caused by an imbalance in niacin and tryptophan. So niacin is vitamin B3. Pellagra causes symptoms such as anemia, bad breath, sensitivity to sunlight, leading to a corpse-like appearance to the skin, and other symptoms that link with vampire folklore.
Mm.
So pellagra did not exist there until the 18th century after corn was introduced from North America.
Interesting. I wonder what corn has to do with pellagra.
They didn't wash it. They didn't understand that you needed to wash it. So it became a principal staple in the diet.
Mm.
Rabies was also epidemic at the time and existed in Eastern Europe before the 18th century. There's a lot of data from the period of the great vampire epidemic that links rabies to a large number of deaths in Eastern Europe, where vampire hysteria was particularly strong.
Or like they say in Old Yeller, hydrophobia. That's rabies. They just called it hydrophobia in Old Yeller for some reason.
Right, because that's a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
So several hundred cases of the disease were recorded, spread initially by rabid wolves.
Mm.
And then at least some cases, people.
Oh, gosh. So. Well, I mean, yeah, if you're like foaming at the mouth and rabid and biting other people, the link to vampire seems pretty clear there.
Right? Yes. It makes sense why they thought that. The wolf and the vampire.
It's not funny, but it's hilarious.
It is hilarious. I'm terrified of getting rabies because I know what happens. Like, you know, once it crosses the blood-brain barrier, you're done, and you don't even know it. So, the wolf and the vampire have a well-known link as being a creature that the vampire can change into.
Mm-hmm.
But further, the disease is spread through biting, victims avoiding sunlight. Victims avoid sunlight, and they could be repelled by strong odors.
Interesting.
Garlic being a possibility.
I did not know that.
These are only a few of the links. And, of course, the one you mentioned that was a symptom, which is?
Foaming at the mouth?
No, hydrophobia.
Oh, biting?
No, hydrophobia.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
being afraid of water, I guess.
Yes,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's an actual symptom of rabies.
I had no idea. I did not know that either.
Yeah, I didn't go into all of that detail because there's a lot. But yes, hydrophobia is fear of water. They explained it like something about it hurts to swallow and stuff. So you become afraid of water.
Hmm.
When you get water in your mouth, that's why you foam at the mouth.
Oh, my goodness. So I had no idea that there was a connection there.
It causes you to foam at the mouth. So you were actually way on point and you didn't even know it.
Well, I mean, I knew the hydrophobia meant a fear of water, but I had no idea why they called rabies that.
That's why.
Wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
See, we learn something new every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love learning.
Me too.
The hysteria that started to spread into the rest of Europe led to the word vampire that we're more familiar with.
Mm.
So Western European doctors and scientists debunked the existence of vampires. But by the 19th century, it was slowly adapted into literature and then theater, later film, and over time into the wide variety of examples that we have today.
Thank God. Could you imagine a world without Twilight?
Yeah. I can, actually.
Me too.
But I cannot imagine a world without Dracula.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So Stepanek states that had the great vampire epidemic not occurred and the two diseases not been largely responsible for it happening, the vampire spread as a symbol into other cultures may have never occurred.
Nice. So there was a long history of Slavic vampire folklore and superstitions, even predating Dracula by centuries.
Yes.
So get back to that a little bit.
So even though he helped popularize the idea of vampires having Hungarian or Romanian origins, mm-hmm. Bram Stoker, in the first chapter, Jonathan Harker is traveling to Count Dracula's castle. It's in the Carpathian Mountains in Transylvania, of which the capital is today in Romania, but it included part of Hungary. So yeah. Part of this is his fault. Like, right, he's responsible for mm-hmm. making this connection.
Right.
On the way, he stops the character in the novel.
Yeah.
Not Bram Stoker. On the way, Harker stops and he has a Hungarian stew for dinner.
Yum.
And he reports on the ethnicities of Transylvania, including the Szekels. And I actually, which are Hungarian, mm-hmm. I actually asked Daniel, since he spent a year in Romania and is familiar with the language, if he knew how to say this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not. Mm. So apologies again to this ethnicity.
Well, I mean, you said it confidently, so yeah. I would buff that.
Yeah, okay. Dracula was also supposed to be Szekels, which is, again, an ethnicity in Hungary and also Romania. So all of this solidifies that Hungarian connection,
mm-hmm.
even if he lived in Romania.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about Dracula as if he was a real person. But this is a fictional character entirely made up of an amalgamation of superstitions and people and places.
But I thought he was like based on a real person. Like, wasn't like Vlad the Impaler the inspiration for Dracula?
Yes, that's what I thought as well. And if you look at mm-hmm. like the picture of Vlad the Impaler, he was actually kind of an attractive dude for his time. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did impale people, so makes him less attractive, but
with a stake.
Yes. This is accepted so much that I have seen it repeated over and over
mm-hmm.
everywhere. And I found out while doing research for this podcast mm-hmm. episode that it's not true.
What? You're blowing my mind here.
Yes. So it was generally accepted that Stoker modeled Dracula on Vlad the Impaler, who was a Wallachian, who knows? Sorry, Hungary and mm-hmm. all of the whole region. Apologies. A warlord, Vlad III, nickname Vlad Tepes, or in English, Vlad the Impaler. So Vlad III was a member of the House of Draculesti and mm-hmm. is one of a handful of historical figures whose title is rendered as Voivode Dracula in English language texts, which means military ruler.
Okay.
So there were several words that I butchered there. That's what I was referring to at the beginning.
Good job. Better you than me.
So anyway, he was viewed as a hero for fighting the Ottoman Empire, but he was also known for his acts of cruelty, which of course included impaling. So one very cool tidbit is that recent research from 2023, so just 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
based on an analysis of samples collected from letters written by Vlad, is that he may have had a rare condition called hemolacria, which causes a person's tears to be partially composed of blood.
Oh, my Lord. Yes. That is terrifying nightmare fool. You yes. are like going to be super scary if you're like crying blood.
I kind of almost wish I yeah. had it. Imagine if like I cried in front of students.
I wonder if it's painful. I hope it's not.
Yeah,
if it's not, that would be cool. Yeah,
yeah.
Just like staring your class down and just start bleeding out of your eyeballs.
I kind of almost think you have to become evil, though, if you have this, right? Because like, how can you use that mm-hmm. and be sympathetic as a person?
You would make them scared of you for sure.
I know. People would be mm-hmm. scared of you. So I'm sure that, influenced his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So Dracula only has the name in common with Vlad. And the fact that they both fought against Turks during their lifetimes. Stoker's research notes were found in 1972 in a library in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And books published before that making the link were like, oopsies.
Oh, wow.
Because with the discovery of the notes, it's clear his understanding of vampire lore came from numerous books on European superstitions that he consulted during the course of the writing, including one on Transylvania specifically. Mm-hmm. Also, vampires already existed in Gothic literature. John Polidori's 1819-20, the vampire I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was published in 1819 or 1820. And Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu's 1871 Carmilla. So Stoker invented some new powers and weaknesses that were not part of this original folklore. But if there were a stronger connection with Vlad the Impaler, the people who found these research notes and have now studied it extensively said it would have been written there.
Yeah, it would have been.
Because everything that he did, all of the research, all of it was written. They have the names of books that he consulted. Mm-hmm. It's not there.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, it's like 100% accepted as true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know. I wouldn't have questioned it.
Anywho, back to Hungary. There were other connections in the book, such as Stoker using the name of his Hungarian professor acquaintance. Mm. But remember, the Hungarian Vampire Association already existed. So he did likely read about it in the books he consulted on superstitions. And Dracula wasn't even originally from Transylvania. According to Stoker's notes, he was going to have him be from Austria.
Oh, okay.
So, unfortunately, even Romania relies on this Vlad connection for tourism, because when I was looking at all of the destinations that you could go and tour, it's Dracula tourism. They have a huge industry for Dracula tourism. Some of them were like Vlad's castle, Vlad's fortress, and Vlad's grave.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Transylvania, how could you not have Dracula as a major part of your tourism?
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to do it all, even though I now know Dracula's not based on that.
Yeah. So vampires actually do have early associations to Hungary. Mm-hmm. But even though Dracula was hungry for your blood, he was not actually Hungarian.
Oh, well, there's a whole subreddit debating this point because of how the region has changed. Mm-hmm. What was Hungary that now isn't? But you know how internet's net fights go. Like there was one whole subreddit called it makes me so hot that they say Dracula hot as an angry.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be like that.
Mm-hmm. It makes me so hot that they say Dracula is Romanian when he's Hungarian. Mm. You know, like there's some real fights on
there. So fierce internet debates.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's a connection.
There's a connection.
But as far as being the homeland of vampires, it predates Hungary. Mm-hmm. And we can thank old Slavic folklore.
Nice.
Okay, so it's my turn to say, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that the U.S. had its own vampire epidemic.
Yes.
The New England vampire scare. And this is kind of justicey and connects to several episodes that we've done before, like the Black Angels of Seaview and the necrophilia episode. We talked a bit about violating corpses. But I was reading a story in Smithsonian Magazine, and apparently in 1990 in Connecticut, these kids were out playing in the woods and like found a bunch of graves and bones. And one grave in particular, like the head had been cut off and placed on kind of like the chest with the arms crossed in kind of like a skull and crossbone manner. And the ribs had been broken and pried open. And at first, the police suspected that it might have been the work of a serial killer. Apparently, there was one caught in the area. I don't remember it. But archaeologists found out pretty quickly that the remains were a colonial era cemetery.
Ooh.
And the state of one of that one body in particular was consistent with the vampire panic of the
1700s. Nice.
But basically here it was a tuberculosis plague.
Right.
So going back to the Seaview nurses, we talked about TB before. But it's basically a wasting disease, and it was actually called consumption at the time, because people were kind of like wasting away, like they were being eaten alive. So people lost weight, they had fevers, they had ashy skin, and their eyes sunk in, and sometimes blood, you know, came out of their mouth when they were coughing.
Right.
And of course, people didn't understand the, you know, communicable nature of that. And so they thought that the first person who died from it was then returning from the dead and feasting on their family members, and that's why they were wasting away. So the first person died, they became a vampire, and they were coming back and feasting on the living. And instead, you know, the family members just caught TB from them. So it wasn't uncommon in that kind of hysteria for people to dig up graves and remains of recently deceased and behead them and remove their hearts and remove their organs to keep them from coming back and feasting on the living.
Oh, yeah.
And one notorious episode involves the public burning of a dead woman's heart. So they pulled her heart out and burned it in the public square. And her name was Mercy Brown. And I read in several stories that news clippings about Mercy Brown were found in Bram Stoker's notes and that she inspired the Lucy character.
Oh, okay.
But I couldn't concretely confirm it. So most of these, these news stories kind of like, well, it was rumored or it's been reported that, stories about Mercy Brown were in Bram Stoker's files. But I couldn't actually confirm or not. And our first episode was on satanic moral panic.
Yes.
And this is kind of like a vampire.
It is.
Vampire moral panic.
It's very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if those were going on at the same time, like, did those epidemics start independently? Mm-hmm. Or is it like the fact that that's all old Slavic folklore that then people who migrate take those stories with them?
Mm-hmm.
Or did those stories cross an ocean? I've crossed an ocean of time. Mm-hmm. To find you. That's a line from Dracula, by the way.
Oh, wow.
The movie,
very
not
cool.
The book.
Oh. Yeah. Well, good job weaving that in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, should we wrap it up with our minute to spin it? So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
As you know, I recently discovered submitting my DNA to Ancestry.com that I am part vampire.
Don't bot me.
No, on a more serious note, mm-hmm. I know two people now who have submitted their DNA and found out their actual biological fathers were not their biological fathers.
Oh my gosh.
That's not what happened to me,
that's
though.
Dramatic.
I was just hoping to find my African connection, mm-hmm. but I discovered very shockingly that some of my ancestral line is Eastern European Roma.
Oh.
And that was a big surprise. So I have a connection, albeit a long time ago. Yeah, a long ago one to the region.
Well, that's cool.
But I've always loved vampires, so who knows? Mm-hmm. I also did eat a lot of Count Chocula cereal growing up, thanks to my grandfather. And my last name is Castle.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of connections.
There are lots of connections.
Who knows what I do at night? Mm-hmm. Except I'm still alive, so.
I was looking around for a mirror to see if
I know.
Just like double check. I'm going to check and make sure you show up in a mirror.
Have you ever seen my reflection in the mirror?
Well, I do see the back of your head reflecting on the police procedural mirror behind you. So
that was something Stoker added, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
It wasn't part of original folklore.
That is cool.
So based on Stoker's not real vampire, you would be able to see my reflection.
Oh, gosh. So maybe that's just made up and you are a real vampire.
Right.
Yeah.
Ben, what's your spin?
I want to suck your blood. So, another thing that I wanted to talk about, I did some research on people who currently claim
to
be vampires.
This should definitely be a part of it.
Yeah, like real life vampires who consume blood. So there are some people who say they're just energy vampires who consume the energy from other people.
Yes.
Whatever.
I've called people emotional vampires before, not to their face.
There are definitely people that like suck the energy right out of you.
Yes.
But some people actually say they're sanguinary vampires and drink blood.
Yes.
And I was reading one interview with one sanguinary vampire, and she was talking about the difficulty of finding a consenting victim, which later in the article, she changed it to host. She was like, victim doesn't sound so good, but a consenting host.
Yes.
But particularly she was saying it's so much of a hassle to get my host to go to the doctor and get a blood test to make sure they don't have any bloodborne illnesses.
Oh, yes.
Before.
Which, show me your health data.
Yeah, that definitely tones down the fear factor of a vampire. Like, can you imagine a vampire getting ready to drink your blood and be like, oh, let me see your health record. No. Or you could keep vampires away from that. Like, vamp, don't bite me or you'll get hepatitis. Leave me alone.
Yes.
So.
Hep C. I got Hep C. Leave me alone.
Don't drink my blood, vamp.
Yes.
But anyway, happy Halloween, everybody, and especially to our Hungarian listeners. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're listening from Hungary, let us know how you found us. Message us. We always love to get connected with our listeners and hear from them. So let us know how you found us, and thanks for listening. And trick or treat, everybody.
Trick or treat. We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website, linked in show notes, to see how you can support our educational programming.